And I remember in one of our first meetings months ago, one of them said something to the effect of, you know, I'd like to speak about the idea of calming our fears. Because sometimes there's just things that keep us up at night. And how do we speak into a level of calming our fears in the midst of that? And so that led to, the question was, okay, so what is on your mind? And that led to the survey that we did last fall, if you remember that. Thank you to the many of you that participated in that survey, where we asked questions. We actually asked that as one of the questions, what keeps you up at night? And a few other questions, and got rich, rich input. Thank you again. And a few of the items we'll try to talk through this time, but it's something that we will refer back to and go back to, at least I will. I've seen the results. I shared it with Kathy. And it's been good for us to reflect on where you're at and what's kind of on your mind. And so that led to this idea of balancing expectations, okay? Because there is realness of expectations that we face that are put upon us. There's the reality of who we are and what we're capable of, what we're not capable of. And there is this simple, how do we balance these things? That's the word that I think you're going to keep coming back to. It's a tension to be managed. You've heard me probably say that before. Not necessarily a problem to be solved, but I think it's very real and important to think about it and to discuss it. Now, comment, and we'll get into it. So about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, they tore down the high school that was in our town, town of Gridley. They tore it down, and we consolidated, and they rebuilt a new school, and so they tore it down. Well, before, it's a 100-and-some-year-old building, beautiful building. But before they did it, they kind of had this open day, like anybody who wants to come in there and take something from the high school. And so you know, we all went in there and was trying to find our classrooms and take, you know, whatever, you know, odds and ends. Well, I got into the gym and I found the balance beam. I don't know if any of you had one of these in your school, right? They're like 6-foot-long balance beam, about 4 inches off the ground. That as kids, we had to kind of walk across the balance beam. And I found a way to get that home, and Katie was not quite as impressed as I was with the balance beam. And it's sitting in the back of our shed right now. But it's an artifact, I guess. And so I thought, as Kathy and I were talking, I was like, you know what, we could bring that up here, and we could set it up here, you know, in the setting, and then we could just kind of go through the balance beam, right? And anybody who wants to, right, can walk through it. And she said no. So all of you closet gymnasts that were looking forward to that activity, you can blame her, and all the rest of you can be thankful for her. So we're not doing any balance beam activities, but we are going to talk about the idea of balance. Okay. One of the ways the scripture talks about it, there's a psalm that came to our mind as we were thinking about it, Psalm 61. We'll go into Psalm 61 in just a second. But one of the themes that you'll hear us talk about today is just this whole idea of expectations. And there's times when the expectations that we face, maybe internally, or that are faced upon us externally, they can get to almost a level of overwhelm, or a place where it just seems more than we can bear. And David has some wonderful instruction in the midst of Psalm 61 that we'll talk into. And then there's some other things and some skills and things that we'll get into. And I will just warn you that the first part of this, we're going to teach a little bit and then discuss. The first part of this is kind of the level setting part. That's how I kind of say it. Let's talk about some of the hard stuff together. But then the second part is going to shift, and we're going to talk about, okay, so what are the resources or the skills or things available to us to support us as we go through that? Okay, so just don't, we don't want this to be, we want this to be real, but we don't want it to be like overly, you know, negative. So just realize there's hope coming on here. But one of the, just to kind of level set, this idea of resiliency you see throughout the scriptures. Resiliency or spiritual health, they're really tied together very closely. Our spiritual health will have an impact on how resilient we are. As we are resilient, it has an impact on our spiritual health. And resiliency, by definition, many of us go through this at different levels in our lives, careers, whatever. in the context here of this of elder wives, we're thinking about resiliency, is the ability to bounce back. There's a definition out there. Adapting well in the face of adversity, trauma, tragedy, threats, significant sources of stress. But it speaks to this idea of how do we bounce back? Something that's resilient, kind of can spring back. They sometimes use that example of the, you know, those little inflatable, I don't know what they're called. I think they were called Bobo dolls. I'm not sure if that's right or not. But those little inflatable things, they had like a weight in the bottom, and you blow them up, and then you can knock it, and bounce right back. Now, you know, so it's a little bit of a picture of that, this idea that how can we bounce back? Or maybe you've been in some place where you've seen, I always am impressed with like palm trees and kind of the tropical locations that have gone through really significant storms or stress. I mean, they're kind of bent, but there's still resilience. They're still flourishing in the midst of that, dealing with the circumstances they are. And there's a beautiful passage there in Habakkuk, and I'm not going to quote it, but at the end of Habakkuk, you probably are familiar with it, where the prophet is speaking, and he says, though everything fails, basically, the fig tree doesn't blossom, the cattle are not in the stalls, there's, you know, he lists about five or six things that are not going well. He says, yet I will joy and rejoice in my Savior, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet to go upon the places, literally, where I cannot go by myself. That's a beautiful picture, a beautiful imagery of what resiliency looks like. But how do we balance that? How do we live in the reality of the world that we have with all these things and still respond with a level of joy? What does that look like? So David speaks of it this way in Psalm 61. He speaks to the idea. Can you go get that? He doesn't like. Okay, I just have to push really hard. He speaks to the idea of let me just read the first four verses of Psalm 61. Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah. We're going to focus on the first two verses for this first portion and the second two verses for the second portion. But notice how he's laying this out. Hear my cry, O Lord. Attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. And he's going to go on to ask for the solution. But notice the eyes and the mys. That's why I kind of underlined there a little bit at the beginning here. Very real and very appropriate. That's the relationship we have with our Father, is that he wants us to be personal. He wants us to be real and bring those requests before him. Because he knows them already, right? Even before we verbalize them. But that, as part of the opportunity of prayer and engagement with our Father, when I feel these things, hear me, from the end of the earth, when my heart is overwhelmed, that picture of overwhelmed has a hint of the idea of shrouding. Kind of when God is shrouded from me, when I cannot see God, when the path is unclear, when it seems overwhelming. Lord, what do I do in those situations? Where do I go in those situations? I need you to help me in those situations. And as we did the survey and talked through the survey and got wonderful feedback from the survey, if you switch it there, maybe it was too far away. We asked that question, this is in your book, what keeps you up at night? These are pretty much some direct quotes or just some compilation of quotes. And it doesn't necessarily mean the bigger ones were more or not, but we kind of put this together. I just want you to kind of capture this. This is words that were shared with us, which we really appreciate. You know, what keeps you up at night? Not doing enough, managing your children's needs, not having enough time for all the demands, fear of how sermons are impacting certain people in the church, navigating criticism, lack of clarity on the role of an elder wife, not agreeing with how things are being handled, managing my husband's needs, struggling to maintain balance, dealing with those that seem to have a lack of respect for leadership in the church, knowing about all those that are hurting, within the congregation. These are things that we hear. And I don't know if they resonate with you or not. If these are things that often, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and something is on your mind, you know, these start to resonate. But these were some of the internal expectations that we were hearing from you and have heard from you. And it makes sense, I think, in some extent, when you think about the next slide, which speaks to this idea of, you know, what are the expectations sometimes placed upon this role of the elder's wife? Now, this is not meant to be an exhaustive list, and this is not meant to be overwhelming in itself. I want to be clear about that. But this is meant to just kind of think through what, and maybe, you know, every situation is a little bit different. But it seems like sometimes we expect the elder's wife to be kind of the administrative scheduling, you know, guru for the church, you know, planning all things, to make sure that they're visiting all of the needs of the church, whether someone's sick or whether someone just visits the church or for the first time or whatever. They're thinking about the congregational health. They're the evangelist, the chief evangelist for the church. Of course, you will welcome everybody who comes through the church doors and make sure they feel welcome. They're involved in teaching. They're involved in counseling or supporting individuals. But then they also have to, we have to think about our personal growth. How are we growing personally? How are we managing the crises that are emerging or having a level of conflict resolution? And, of course, we need to support our husbands, care for our family, have some level of authentic fellowship for ourselves and think about our own personal growth, he said, modeling self-sacrifice. And we could probably list others there too. But we see that the expectations can be placed upon us. And they can get to this place, at least I think, where probably at times it can seem a level of overwhelm. And the risk is, one last thought, I'll turn over to Kathy. The risk is that you could get into this compounding effect of fatigue. Some of you maybe remember Edwin Rinder as the elder of Gridley. He was the elder before Earl, who was before Harvey. He was the elder when I repented for the formative part of my life. And I remember he would say a phrase over the pulpit. And I don't know if it was original to him or not, but he would repeat a lot. He would say, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all. Fatigue makes cowards of us all." And it's always stuck with me for the realness of that saying. And you can see it up here, right? Fatigue can lead to where we're inefficient, and then we feel more guilty, and then we can have more stress, and it can just be compounding. You know, how many sleepless nights or not very good nights of sleep does it take before you start to really, it gets at you? And so we need to think about how do we respond. We're not going to solve it today, sisters. We're not going to necessarily solve it. But can we talk about it and can we think about how do we be aware of these expectations and think about the fatigue that can kind of weigh into us if we're not careful and the compounding effects it has. So there's some of the external things that are placed upon us. Kathy's going to talk about a couple of areas where internally things can be placed upon us. And then we will go into our first discussion time as well.
Apparently it works because I just shut it off. Oh, there it is. Good morning, everyone. I am really excited to be here. I have to say I'm loving these barns that we were in Morton and here. Growing up on a farm, it makes me feel like I'm not as out of place as I feel sometimes up here talking. So this is a good setting for me to be in. Before we get into internal expectations, I just have to share something with all of you, and that is, as I was coming up here this morning, I was thinking about being here, and I had gotten some phone calls from some family members, and two of them, and each of them said this: "Are you nervous?" I said, "Yes, I am, and thanks for asking that question. It's not helpful, actually." So, but what that did make me do is I had to reflect a little bit, actually, on the first time I came to an elder's wife presentation, and I remember thinking, wow, I had a lot different feelings the first time. I think it was in 2022, maybe. I think that I would label myself as feeling terrified at that point, and a little bit like, Kathy, what are you doing? Like, this isn't your role in life. And And that shifted a little bit, and that's a good thing. I feel actually really happy and excited to be here. And it made me kind of chuckle because I'm talking about internal expectations with all of you. And that is what was driving the show for me in 2022, right? My own feelings of inadequacy or insecurity or whatever that would have been. And it was my internal expectations that was leading that feeling of, like, maybe I should just tell him I have car trouble and I can just turn around. And so I think that my point in all of that is, I'm sure in your role there are times that you feel a little bit like, what am I doing here, or how do I get through this big hurdle that we have in front of us? And I would just say that when we let our internal expectations drive the show and we don't steward it well, and we don't focus in on God's grace and how it says it's sufficient in our weakness, then we really can just feel chronically overwhelmed and stressed. And so this part here, it's really fun. We get to talk about things like comparison and perfectionism, and so they're really fun topics, and it might make you squirm just a little bit, and that's maybe okay. Kind of like Arlen said, the point isn't to make you feel bad, but the point is to maybe help you think, and hopefully you can walk away with one or two things to just shift a little bit and to rethink about in order to make the next little bit go just a little bit easier. So here's just cross out relationships. We had way too much content, so we took that out. We'll talk about that maybe at a later point. But here's how we landed on the comparison and perfectionism topics. As I was looking through the responses on specifically that question of what keeps you up at nighttime, I was reading the answers, and I was like, yes, there was the content of the answers, but I was trying to think, like, what am I hearing here, or what am I reading here? And I think just the number of answers that were like, I don't feel like I'm doing enough, or there's more demands than, questions like that. I'm just not doing enough. And my question was just like, who told you that? And that's kind of where the comparison piece comes up. And then also all of the managing my kids' needs and my husband's needs and family needs and church. And like, yes, that is a reality that you all are facing and trying to steward. But I think what my thought is that you're probably trying to do it all flawlessly or perfectly. So that's why we get to talk about perfectionism. So you guys actually chose these topics today. Arlen, you can flip it. Okay, so comparison. I think if you would just let yourself take a second and just reflect on your life of, like, where did you first experience your first experiences of comparison? I would say 90% of us experienced it first, probably before we even remember, but like elementary school playgrounds or middle school, like that's just like the breeding ground for comparisons, right? Our bodies are different than other people's bodies, or we get picked last for the team, or, you know, whatever it is. And these comparisons start, and then they continue to high school and young adult and, like, probably into your marriages and when you were first having kids. And then, unfortunately, I'm guessing that followed you all the way into your role as elder's wife. I would almost guarantee that it has happened. You maybe have had some thoughts of comparison, maybe today in this room, or maybe you will at some point over the next few days. It's just, the quote is out there that comparison is the game everybody plays, but nobody ever wins. And it's just, we're always the underdog when we're having thoughts of comparison. The other quote I love about comparison is it says, comparison is the thief of joy. And that's just so true. And that's because with comparison, we're focused on ourselves or what we don't feel like is going right or what we could be doing better. And our focus just shifts a little away from how God has actually equipped us or what God is doing. And then that just robs us of the joy that we could be feeling. I also will say, when I'm talking with clients and this theme is coming up, I want to be a really good counselor, and I certainly struggle with this myself. I'm not trying to act like I'm perfect here, but I want to just be a good counselor and say, just stop, please. Like, just stop comparing yourself. I don't say that. I mean, sometimes I do, but I try not to say it quite like that. But the reason, one of the skills that we'll talk about sometimes is having to visually put up a stop sign in your mind. Like, when your thoughts are going down the comparison road for so far, being able to just to visualize that stop sign, to be able to give yourself time to pause and shift is really important. And the reason that I just always think that it just has to stop is another phrase I like to think about is just comparison always leads to a dead end. Like there, it doesn't ever lead to any place good. And we can find that is true in the Bible. We have this verse up here, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. You also can look in the scripture that talks about spiritual gifting, and this is maybe taking not exactly what it says, but kind of that, like you can't be the hand and say to the foot, like, I wish I was you or I don't need you, right? There's lots of examples in the Bible of comparison and why it's just not a good thing to do. And then I also love to think of the story of Saul and David when you think about comparison. It's a really classic example of why comparison is so dangerous. So I want to just give like a 2-minute, or I don't know how long it'll take, but let's just talk about the story of Saul and David for a second. So if you think about what was going on back then is Israel wanted a king and God gave them Saul, right? So Saul, I would imagine that there were lots of events in Saul's life that equipped him for the role of king, and God put him in that place for a reason. And then at the same time, there was David, who was equipped to do the things God needed him to do and also ultimately be king. And David was doing great things. He killed Goliath. He was leading armies. You guys all know that, right? He was doing great things. And Saul noticed that. And that's when the comparison piece started, right? Saul looked over and just saw what David was doing, and it drove him mad, basically. You know, and then the other part that's difficult is people in that time didn't make it any better, right? People think they're helpful, and they're very unhelpful. You all know that, right? And so them singing the song of, like, what was it? Saul his thousands and David his 10,000s, right? That brought up so much, even more comparison for Saul. We've talked before about how situations happen and it leads to thoughts, feelings, and reactions, and you can see that play out well there. That people are praising up David and seeing all the good things he's doing, and Saul is thinking, I don't know the exact thoughts, but I would say, like, David's better than me, or people are going to like him more, or he's gonna do greater things, or people are going to be happier with David. Right? So all of those thoughts which led to that, I would say jealousy, right? Like probably the feeling that comes out of comparison is jealousy. So you see the jealousy come up there. And then you see the situations that come just were not good choices, right, that Saul made. And so you can kind of see how that just led Saul right to a dead end. So my point in saying all of that is just, I would just really challenge you that if you don't choose, and I would say comparison, there's a lot of things in life that can go wrong that aren't our choice, but I think comparison is a little bit of a choice. And so until you choose to surrender comparison, you're going to be as ineffective in all of your roles as Saul was in his. And that brings me to these pictures. I think that I don't even have to explain these pictures. You get it, right? It's a really good visual of comparison. When we're comparing ourselves to somebody else, it's like we're these rolling pins and we're assuming that we're all designed to do the same thing and in the same manner. And that's just not how it is. And the beauty of how God designed us is we're actually all more like this over here. There's, you know, just even the verses of like there's many gifts differing and they all benefit the body. I thought when I look at this, if we were all soup ladles, how would we ever get cake cut on our plate, right? And you miss out on the joys of stuff. And so it's a good thing that we're different, and we need to be able to steward that well. And actually, so specifically to your elder wives role, I would say your church will benefit from you just being you. And because God has you here for that reason. I want to validate this really quick before we move on. It's possible that people view you all as these rolling pins in the church, right? That's a possibility because we think of elder wives and we think this is what they're supposed to be doing. And so there is maybe some external pressure that comes there. Or if you're in a spot in your church where there is a retired elder's wife, there people might very easily compare you to them or think you should be handling things in the same way. And so that is a reality of all of this, and that is the challenge that's there. I would just say that that's where the need to shift your thinking to more helpful ways of thinking is so important, right? Being able to remind yourself that God designed me this way, and I'm not the person that was before, or we're not the same as the church down the road, right? I'm me, and I'm going to use the gifts and talents that God gave me in this role. So helpful ways of thinking is my point there. Okay, here's what we're going to do. If you turn your page, or maybe it's right next to it, we're going to take just a few minutes and do some self-reflection. I was thinking about just sending this home with you, but I don't know if you'll actually do it, and I want you guys to think about it. So I want you to take just a little bit of time. Arlen will let us know how much time we have.
1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute. I want you to look through these questions and just maybe start to silently answer them for yourself and just think about this. This is going to kind of drive the point of comparison a little bit more, and then we'll keep moving. Okay, I know everybody's pens are still going, but you will be able to bring this booklet home, and I would just really encourage you to look through it and reflect on those questions. We'll keep moving so that you guys have good discussion time at your tables. Okay. Now, if that one wasn't fun enough, we're going to move into talking about perfectionism. My guess would be if I would have asked that anybody that has never struggled with comparison can just feel free to leave, I'm going to guess nobody would leave. And the tricky part is if you would have left, we would have all compared ourselves to you. But the truth is with this one here is there might actually be people that would leave the room. Like I'm acknowledging that this is not a struggle for everyone, but I think that there are threads of it or roots of it that we all can struggle with at times. And so if it completely doesn't apply to you, maybe just listen, because there's probably people in your family or your congregation that do struggle with it, and maybe you'll learn something. So let's start out with this quote. Brené Brown is always good for quotes. And this says, when perfectionism is driving us, shame is riding shotgun, and fear is that annoying backseat driver. So I don't know about you, but probably the thing that drives me the most to frustration when I'm driving is that backseat driver. Like just that voice of like, don't forget that you have to turn up here. I know I've traveled this road 1,000 times, right? It's just kind of a little bit annoying. And that is what fear will do to us. It's just kind of that chronic voice in the back of our head of like, are you sure? Like, what if this person gets upset? Or what if you fail in this way? Or what if there's details you forgot about? Like, guy kind of rerun it. People that planned this week probably know a little bit of what I'm talking about there. So when fear is that backseat driver and is just constantly having unhelpful thoughts come up, we really quickly connect with our passenger of shame, and that also is kind of what triggers up some of that comparison piece. And so one of the things I want to say with this is I'm actually not even thinking about this topic through like the clinical lens of perfectionism. That certainly is probably a topic worth talking about. I'm just talking a little bit more about like generalized perfectionism, which I may have just made that up, that that's a thing, but I think you'll get it as I'm talking about it. So the definition that I'm thinking about is this perfectionism that's driven primarily by internal pressures, such as the desire to avoid failure or harsh judgment. So this is that like chronic feeling of needing things to feel right or for things to go flawless or to not lose control of a situation or like kind of just to make sure that you have all your bases covered. And what happens with this, unfortunately, is we get, like when we're in this mindset of perfectionism, we really have a hard time breaking out and doing things differently. Because if this way or this system has worked before, we just have to keep it in place always, and then that way I know I can stay in control and nothing's gonna go wrong. The example that comes to mind is, so babies trying to get them to go to sleep. So if you have a baby that hasn't slept like for weeks and then they finally sleep through the night,
I think sometimes there's this thing with parents of like, okay, we sang this many verses of Jesus Loves Me, and the room was this temperature, and the right, because we have to do it exactly perfect so that we get the right outcome of they'll sleep again tonight. And so really this perfectionism piece, as I would say, is it's focused on the outcome, and that we can control the outcome first, knowing that ultimately God is in control. And then what happens from the starting point to the outcome is this frenzy that we're in, and this stress and overwhelm. And this is what it leads to. Oops, hold on. I kind of like that picture, right? Just a sheer exhaustion. This idea that we are trying to do things and make it look really effortless actually takes a lot of effort, and then we're overwhelmed and it exhausts all of our resources, making us just more ineffective. I was listening to a podcast recently, and they said this phrase, they were talking about perfectionism, and they said, you got to drop perfectionism, but it's okay to still pursue excellence. Excellence is this idea that you are giving it your best, you're doing your job well, but you're not trying to have just a perfect outcome. On my way up today, there was a van I passed, and it was like for a business of some kind, and the sign on the van was upside down, and that's really hard for me. Like, I could probably struggle with this a little bit, and I just thought whoever did that had one job, right? And so that piece there of like, it's okay to still do excellence and do your best, but it's that extra pressure that perfectionism puts on it. And I think the really good thing to think about too is we can't forget about the value that we're pursuing as we're doing something. Perfectionism, again, can get us stuck on the outcome, but we do things because we have value in it. And the example of Mary and Martha comes up there for me. If you think about it, the Mary and Martha in the Bible had two different visions of what worship looked like, in my opinion, right? One, Mary took it very literal of worship, and Martha maybe was a little bit more service, was worship for her. And I think that's wonderful and beautiful, and there's not a problem with that. But what happened, you can see in that part of the Bible, is it caused so much angst in her, right? She was striving so hard for it to go well and go perfect that she just robbed herself of all the joy. And Jesus' response to her was, Martha, Martha, right? Like, slow down. The expectation that you're trying to pursue here isn't even the expectation I have here. And so here is my takeaway from this slide for all of you. Sometimes we just have to be able to let ourselves get comfortable with that feeling of things just don't come together perfectly always. So that is that's a feeling. You maybe kind of feel it in your gut a little bit, or it causes you a little bit of worry. Perfectionism is going to make you try to do everything possible to avoid that feeling. But really, your ability to practice distress tolerance skills and emotional regulation skills and getting some accountability and help from other people, all of those things can help settle that feeling, and then you can kind of re-go into line with that value piece of like, what am I actually wanting to do? How am I wanting to do it? And what control do I actually have? Which we'll talk about that piece a little bit more in a later slide. Okay. Do I have time? Okay, we're going to do just a little bit of reflection for some perfectionism. So this question here, the first question might throw you off a little bit. Are you currently pushing the limits of your humanity? That's kind of a bold statement, but I would really like you to think about that. Like, in what areas are you just kind of ignoring these warning lights on your dashboard and just really pushing past what you actually are physically capable of doing? So do some self-reflection for a little bit.
I'm going to transition a little bit. I know you're in the middle of writing, and these are with you, and you can use these and use these prayerfully in reflection time sometime as you take them to the Lord. But I want to transition to some table discussion time. And so on the next page, you'll see three questions that we'd like you to spend 20, 25 minutes or so as a table just walking through these. And there's a level of vulnerability with some of these questions, which we acknowledge. And so as you are comfortable, lean into some of these and just lean into this discussion together. And then we will come back towards the more skill-based for the second part of the talk. First question is, how have you seen the demands or expectations of your role as elder's wife change over the years? Just think about those expectations placed upon you. How have you seen those expectations change? Or were there parts that made you really hesitant? If you can be honest with, as you think about and reflect upon it, what are the parts that really add that stress level or that stress load as you consider it? But lest we just stay on that side, I do, the second one is intentional. Because sometimes we are pleasantly surprised. I actually added that second part after we printed the booklet, so it's not on there in the booklets. But where have you been pleasantly surprised, or where have you experienced joy in this role, right? There's ways that God surprises us with the joy that happens in this. And can we share that together? Can we encourage each other together as we talk about that? And then the third question, do you see these comparison perfectionism things creeping into your life at all? If so, what reduce stress? How do you reduce stress? That was the last question on the reflection for both of those. How do you begin to reduce stress in those areas? So 20 to 25 minutes as a table, if you would just step into discussion around these, share together. If you need to get up, use the restroom, grab a little bit of refills or whatever, please do so. And then about 25 after, we'll come back and do the next part, okay? All right, let's, if you can, kind of bring your thoughts to a close. And let's continue on here just a little bit more, because I want to shift gears, okay? I want to shift gears and go towards the next level here that you have and continue in David's thoughts that he had, right? When my spirit is overwhelmed within me, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, right? So how do we maintain balance or perspective or whatever you want to say? Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. And that psalm is beautiful. In his conclusion, when my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for thou hast been the shelter for me and a strong tower for the enemy. I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings, Selah. Again, the language shifts a little bit from I, this is where I am, to now this is where you are, God. This is what you can do. And it starts with that pivotal verse, whatever that is, verse 2. Where verse 3, I think it is, where he says, lead me, transport me, literally is what that means. I cannot do this. You have to do it. So there's a surrendering that takes place. And then a submitting ourselves to God to say, lead me to the rock that is higher. The rock both being a location, a place, this idea of kind of, you know, coming out and going up somewhere higher where you can gain perspective and see things, but then also the rock being God in David's language that he used often. And so you have this idea that you have been my shelter for me. You have been a strong tower from the enemy. Shelter is, again, speaks to this idea of a person. And back in the Hebrew, it's talking more of like a person that I find rest in. It's my shelter. Here, a strong tower, that's a place I can go to find safety from. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert or the hiding place, another language David uses often, the hiding place of your wings. Our youngest is 4, almost 5, as she reminds me. She's almost 5, but she's 4, right? And she has her favorite hiding places within the house. I don't know if you have your favorite hiding place. And she has her favorite, like, comfort places, which is even more important, right? And that's, you know, on a good day, it's, you know, cuddling up besides dad or mom and just kind of letting us kind of hold her, right? That's the imagery here that God wants us to have. How do we put ourselves into that hiding place of who he is? And what does that look like? Because you have been, past tense, you have been a shelter for me. I can look back and I can reflect on the experiences and the provision that you have provided over the years. I will, present, future tense here, I will abide, I will trust in the covert of your wings. Beautiful psalm to think about. So I'm gonna do three level sets, and then Kathy's gonna walk through a couple skills with you. But three level sets for you to consider. First one, I think it's important for us to realize that the scriptures is very clear. There is work and there is rest needed. And we have to maintain a balance between the two. And I think sometimes, at least in my life, it's either all work or all play, and I have a hard time balancing between the two or balancing between the two. And if I'm not careful as well, it will become I'll work, and then I'll take a long break. And I'll work, and I'll take a long break or a vacation or whatever, and it doesn't really work that well. I don't know about you. It's hard to kind of unwind and kind of relax right away, like on command, you know. Versus this idea almost of like the pattern built in that you see. I mean, you can go back to Genesis. God created, and on the seventh day, he rested. He set up that pattern where it's regularly built in. Paul is going to talk about, you know, we are always abounding in the work of the Lord. There is work to do. We labor, he's going to say earlier in that same chapter, we labor more abundantly than you all. That's what he humbly proclaims. You labor more abundantly than you all. Colossians, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as the Lord and under men. There's things to do. There's always going to be things to do. There's always going to be work to do. It's never going to end. Christ said, the poor you will have with you always. There's always going to be opportunity. But we are called to rest. Christ's famous words, come unto me, all ye labor and are heavy laden. Mary and Martha. He tells Martha, 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 Mary has chosen the better part. Now's the time to rest and worship. Psalm 46, David says, be still and know that I am God. Right? We see this balance. And so the first level set is to realize that we need to think about this in terms of balance. Not make the work go away or not just focus on the rest, but how do we balance work and rest together in our lives? Second level set speaks to this idea of thinking about our role. Beautiful passage, 2 Corinthians 4. It speaks to this idea, God who commanded the light to shine in darkness has shined in our hearts to give light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. Right? We have this treasure in earthen vessels, clay pots, cracked pots, literally is what I think it means when you go back into the Greek there. This imagery idea that you have not perfect vessels. And the light will shine through it. There's a crack here, or there's a ding here, or something isn't quite right. And that's the whole point. Because it's not about us. It's about God who shines through that. And this is an important reminder we have to keep, you know, in front of our face. We are vessels and not solutions. And so I want you to think about the most stressful thing that you have facing you right now. And that's maybe not a fair question. I don't know, you know, if you do that on the spot. But think about that. What's the most stressful thing, or one of the most stressful things you're facing with right now? And realistically view and ask yourself, what is my role in that? What is my role in that? What is the role that I am to play? Because it's a very subtle line in leadership or in positions like this. It's a very subtle line between playing the role of being a vessel and shifting to a place of where I have to fix this, or it's up to me to solve this, or it's up to me to take care of this situation. And it's a very, at least for me, it's a very difficult place to continually remind myself that no, Lord, my role is to be a earthen vessel, jar of clay, that's just reflecting your glory in all of the brokenness, all of its brokenness. So the excellency of the power can be about him and not about us. So the second level set is this whole idea of maintaining realistic expectations of what is in our control and what's not in our control, what is our role and what's not our role. Speaks to that idea that Kathy was saying earlier with perfectionism,
is sometimes we have to get comfortable with uncomfortable emotions. We have to get comfortable with the uncomfortable to realize things will not always go the way that we had hoped they would go. And it's really hard, at least again for me, it's really hard when you care deeply about something, and it's a really important work. I was a high school freshman history teacher for 10, 11 years. And there was not a day when the lesson plan went the way it was supposed to, right? Or the technology worked like it was supposed to, or whatever. Or I thought this was a great question, and the kids are like staring at me or falling asleep on me or whatever, right? You just realize it just isn't going to always work out the way. It's a great cure for perfectionism. But the reality is, here's the other reality is, right? This, we're not talking about high school history education that, you know, they can figure that out sometime along the line, right? We're talking about the church. We're talking about God's work. We're talking about very important things. But it still is that important perspective to have. We are vessels. We are not solutions. And how do we hold ourselves accountable to this? How do we continue to step into that? You know, and then the last one. And do not read too much into this picture. We are not comparing elders' wives to horses, leaning over fences. Let's be very clear about that. Get the sense of the picture here, okay? The sense of this idea of the grass is always greener on the other side. Because I think this one actually sneaks in there as well. Sometimes we use language, or we could get into this place with language that says, if only this was different. Or if only I didn't have this responsibility, or I didn't have this role, or if only something. And the reality is, sometimes changing location or changing things does make a difference. But often there are many things that are probably causing a level of stress that are still going to be there. So if you were not an elder's wife, or if this church segment or faction or whatever was not acting the way they would, what would you still be facing? What would be different, and what would be the same? And sometimes we can over approximate answers, meaning that we can think that if this just changed, then everything else would go away. And that's not always the case. We still would have families, we still would have responsibilities, we still would have things that we have to walk through. And so keeping that accurate perspective in the midst of it, at least for me, again, I usually need someone to help me with this. I get lost in the trees, you know, see the forest from the trees. I usually need a truth teller. That's what I've been using lately for an accountability person, a truth teller. David and Nathan, think about that wonderful imagery there. A truth teller to come into my life and say, you know what, ask those hard questions. Yeah, this is really hard. But if that would go away, what would be the same? What would be different? And let's just see it clearly, see a little bit clearly what we're expecting there. Because it can look like the grass is always greener, right, on the other side. Or that if we just would change, this would change or whatever. But the reality is, sometimes things shift, but sometimes we still have things to walk through. Okay, so balance. You catch the balance here. Work and rest. Understand our role, that we are vessels, not solutions. And keep that accurate perspective as we walk through these different situations. Now, Kathy's going to walk into just a series of short skills to think about, and then we'll have some discussion about that.
To the last slide, and it made me, when Arlen was talking about that, it made me think of something that Peggy Jackson actually shared with me. She's not here today, but I think that this is her quote, so just you can call her and clarify it, because it might be wrong, but something about if we aren't in the center of God's will anyway, then life isn't going to go well. And so it was something like that. We're having a conversation about something, and so I think that that's a good question to ask to yourself, and just remembering that even when life is difficult, if we're in the center of God's will, that is the best place to be. So that's just my two cents on that slide. So let's move into some skills here. I am going to actually have you practice some skills. We're going to do some videos and practice them. And here's the reason for it. if I tell you about them and you leave here, you're not going to think about them again. And so I know when I go to conferences or continuing ed, I sit there the whole time crossing my fingers that they're not going to make us role play or practice. And the problem is when they do make us do that, I actually can go back and immediately use the skills in counseling. And when they don't, I forget them. So we are going to do just a little bit of practice, nothing major. You're going to sit in your own seats and do it yourself. I want to, we already have one person leaving. This is not good. Sorry. Okay, so one of the things, I just want to bring us back to the fatigue slide for a minute, and that's, we're going to set that up of why this section is important. Here's my thought on the fatigue. I don't want you to be thinking about it, what do I need to do to avoid it, but rather what tools do I need to work through it. My thought is that fatigue will happen. It's not a matter of like if or when, but it will happen just in certain roles. That's what comes up. And we don't have to fear it, but we do have to fear it if we don't have any tools to manage it, or we don't know how our body is telling us that this is the fatigue. I think about that just in my own life. In my first 6 months of being a counselor way back in a role before ACCFS, I didn't realize I was stepping into some of that fatigue and burnout until all of a sudden I realized it, and now I know. I understand, like, okay, this is the sign that some of this fatigue is happening, and I got to do this to kind of pull myself out of it. I think the verses Arlen has been talking or has used in this PowerPoint helps with that too. It says, when my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock, right? It's not if I get overwhelmed, but when. So that's... here, this is why we're talking about tools here. This is probably somewhat familiar to all of you. This idea that there are so many things that we can have on our minds, and there are so many things that can feel concerning. And the reality, which might actually feel a little bit depressing, is that only about 10% of this circle represents what we actually can do something about, or actually what we have the ability to change. So here's where this is a skill. This is not one that you're going to practice today, but the skill here is taking time. I wouldn't wait until you're overwhelmed to do this. I would just make sure that you're maybe doing this as part of some routines that you have. And it's just, I think maybe just think of it as a little bit of a brain dump or some purposeful journaling or to-do list or that sort of thing, where you're just taking some time to just empty your mind. Writing it on paper is helpful. Of all the things that you have running through your mind, all of the loose ends, all of the things that you're worried about, concerned about, overwhelmed about. I think that there's a part of that that it's just freeing. We've talked about in other conferences, we talked about that skill of diffusion, of like being able to take things and kind of put it over on the side screen. And this is that act a little bit of like, I have to get everything out of my head or else it's blinding me. I just need to shift it over. Then the important part of this is then taking, I don't know, maybe a highlighter or a marker or another piece, and taking from that list the things that you actually need to attend to that day or that week or that month, to try and I would just say this just gives you the opportunity to take a little bit of a deeper breath of like, okay, I can't manage all of these things, but this 10% I can focus on and can feel a little bit more ready for. Arlen, is there anything on this that you would add to that? Okay, so we're going to keep moving and go to the next.
The only thing I would say is, this is to your point, this is a really easy thing to acknowledge and head nod and say, yes, oh yeah, I know that. And another really hard thing, though, to actually look at and really keep the stuff you can influence. And just things sneak in.
Yeah, and that's why I would just say make this a continuous practice, or else you're only going to use it when you're overwhelmed, and you're probably going to forget that you have this tool. So if you just do it frequently, then you'll know you have this tool to keep using. Okay, so the next one we're going to talk about is calming our fears, and specifically calming our body. So I have a little bit of a bad habit. If you ask any of my family members, they'll say that I just label everything as anxiety. And that's probably unhelpful, but you know, they'll have a headache and I'll be like, oh, you're anxious about something. Or they'll be sick and it's like, oh, you've been anxious, why don't you just calm down a little bit, right? And so
some knuckles have a little bit of anxiety anyway, so that is probably a fair point. But they say stop labeling everything as anxiety, Kathy. And I actually had a client tell me, I think a better way to look at it is your nervous system is dysregulated. And I think that that is what I would just throw up here today. It's just, you have to make sure that you are managing your, keeping your nervous system regulated. If our bodies are calm, we're able to think clearer and we're able to do the things that we need to do. And honestly, the amount of stress that we carry and when our body is stressed out and maxed out, it actually will lead to health issues. Think back to when what we talked about in Morton, that holistic health, right? So if our physical health is going well, then it helps our mental health and our spiritual health and our relational health, and they're all combined. So part of this learning to settle our physical bodies helps all those other areas. I also would say these are things that do not just try and do in the state of an emergency. When you look at kids who are overwhelmed and you tell them take a deep breath and they've never practiced deep breathing before, it doesn't work. It actually leads them to like hyperventilate because they're like doing this weird breathing thing and it sends them like more into a panic. So if you allow yourself to get into some healthy habits of continually calming your body down most days throughout the week, then what you have is you have a more regulated nervous system that you're starting each day with. So these are things like the deep breathing skills, exercise. I would say like workouts, gyms, all of those are good. Sometimes just taking a walk is good. And one of my favorite ones is sometimes just pulling up, if it's a YouTube video or whatever it is, of some stretching exercises. Because as you're stretching, they're encouraging you to like take some deep breaths in and hold and out. So you're doing multiple things at the same time. And you're also releasing the tension that you're carrying around by doing. The other skill there is progressive muscle relaxation. And it kind of does some of both. So we're going to practice some breathing skills right now. That way, you guys can go out and use these when needed. So this is referred to as square breathing. So we're going to let Brian Suter teach us how to do that.
Now we're going to go into the square breathing. The square breathing is much less natural than the belly breathing. So the purpose here is really to bring attention to our breathing, how we're breathing, so that we're more aware of our breathing, and then that can hopefully help shift it as we walk through day-to-day life. So we're going to breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, and then hold again for 4 seconds. That's going to be a complete breath, and we're going to do 5 of those. So breathe in, hold, breathe out. Hold. Two more. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. Hold. That's two. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. That's 3, 1. Hold. Breathe out. Hold. Okay, there you go. So there's 4 breaths doing the square breathing. And I would recommend if you practice that, to do that for 3 to 5 minutes, just as a way of like kind of recalibrating your breathing, helping bring your attention to the breathing, because it is much less natural. It's going to focus you. You're really going to require a lot of focus and practice on just, oh, it's time to hold, or oh, breathe in, okay, now breathe out. And something that we do without thinking, the square breathing really makes us a lot more conscious because it is much less natural.
If you guys have never done any of the square breathing before, you maybe felt what Brian just
now
said.
Now we're going to go into the square
video.
Breathing. The square breathing is much less natural than the
oh,
body.
Hang on. That might be my fault. Sorry. I needed to push the button. So it can feel a little bit awkward and clumsy. I'm hoping that by like the fourth round of it, it started to feel more natural and comfortable. And that sort of thing is something I would just really encourage. So when we calm our body, we also have to focus on calming our mind. And this is especially important when we're struggling with some anxiety or just stress or racing thoughts. So, and I would just say the more calm our body is, the more calm our mind, and the easier it is to go into the skills that are focused on kind of centering and calming down our racing thoughts. You'll see up here that there is kind of a mix of them, and I would just label this, so mindfulness, thinking of what mindfulness is, mindful practices are really important, and that, I would just say the definition for that is just purposely paying attention to something in the present moment for a period of time. And even just this bullet point up here that talks about enjoying God's creation, that in and of itself can be a mindfulness activity. So, and you might, I think the term is habit stack, like go on that walk, get the exercise, be calming your body, and bring your attention and awareness to just the beautiful creation outside. This has been really easy this winter because we've been able to enjoy warm weather and do these, but that ability to just focus in on one thing on purpose as you're doing things, that helps calm your mind and be more centered. You can do mindfulness in a variety of ways. You can also just be focused on, there's some exercises out there that's called like leaves on a stream, and it's purposely just like thinking about putting all the thoughts in your head on a leaf and letting them float down the stream. You are focused on your thoughts for that, but you're just focused on just watching them as they pass, and that kind of helps bring a little bit of calmness to it. Some of the other ones up here are more on, I would just label them on more some like meditation type things. So the idea of some audio meditations is listening to them allows you to feel calm. And then when it's really hard and our brains are really scrambled, sometimes those audio meditations help speak more helpful ways of thinking into us when our brains just can't quite do it themselves. And so those are all just kind of centered on helping thoughts start to flow just a little bit easier. The solitude one, here's my point in that. I think actually you have to have a really calm mind to be able to do solitude well. But I would say that this is more, maybe I'm just even thinking some of like the Sabbath rest and that sort of thing with it. But the Elijah came to mind with that. Elijah had to get to a place in order to hear the still small voices. He had to get to a place of quiet for that. And so that's the whole purpose of these skills, to calm our mind so that we can better understand, like, what am I supposed to be doing and what is God actually speaking to me? So we're going to let you practice with this a little bit by going through the 23rd Psalm. And with that, we're going to listen to a YouTube video where you just hear the 23rd Psalm being read. So my purpose here is I want you to practice just letting yourself take in the imagery that you see, but then also just being able to listen to the words and let the words just kind of fill your mind and just notice what happens with your body as you do this. I want to just point out just a few little pieces of Psalm 23 that I think are super important. And these are phrases that help settle us and that you can kind of pull out from time to time. And that is just the He restores my soul, right? So when we're overwhelmed, being able to shift that and bring up thoughts like that, or I will fear no evil, thy rod and thy staff comfort me, my cup runneth over, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me, right? Being able to have scripture like this ready, just it's truth and we can believe it, and then it can help us feel calm. I want to just make a note of this when you're listening. This is not in King James Version, so some of the words are going to throw you a little bit, but just take in the scenery, and I think you'll enjoy it.
The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and loving kindness shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the Lord's house forever.
Before, but just that idea of like these are some tools to help, especially when you're feeling that fatigue piece fit in or the overwhelm. And so these were some tools for your toolboxes.
And just one thought to build upon what she said, yeah, go ahead. Is I do think sometimes we look for really big answers to things, at least I do. Again, I look for really big, and if only I can figure out the silver bullet that solves this. And I do believe the Christian life is a lot about repeating and doing things, very simple things, but doing them over and over and over well. Those spiritual disciplines like that. Scriptural meditation and reflecting and thinking about what the Bible says. Breathing deeply, just calming our bodies down. Finding time for those quiet walks or the stillness of abiding with our Father. And that's the power of, I think, our the walk that God calls us to. So just an encouragement in that. If these seemed maybe overly simplistic, I think the Bible would back it up, though. That's what he's about. Relationship of a father and a child resting in the shadow of his wings. So a few questions. Again, hopefully more encouraging, proactive on this side. How do you maintain a realistic expectation for yourself and your role? What's proven helpful for you? Just share together as a table. You know, how do you keep that balanced perspective? What skills have you learned? We just shared a couple of them, but what are skills that you have learned to calm your fears, to calm your minds, to step into these places? And then if you are willing, or if you have something heavy on your heart, please feel free to share a prayer request with the table that the wives can engage in prayer with you, or just take home and share in prayer with you. Let's lean into the relationships that God has given us and step into these places. So we're going to give you 20 minutes to spend some table time discussing. Again, if you need to get up and breaks or whatever. And then we'll, at the end of 20 minutes, we'll come back together for just one announcement, a meal prayer, and we'll move into our noon prayer. Okay? So go ahead and discuss here.